Welcome to The Virtual Shift, a show looking at the seismic changes happening in healthcare with virtual care at the epicenter. Join me and my guests as we look at key cultural and policy shifts impacting how providers, payers, and patients connect, as well as how care is being reimagined both for today and the future. Hello, and thanks for tuning in today. I'm your host, Tom Foley. You can learn more about this show by visiting the program on healthcarenowradio.com, and be sure to follow me on LinkedIn, Twitter, at FoleyTom. And the hashtag, The Virtual Shift. We have a great guest today, Meredith Mull. She is the Vice President of Community Health Strategy at Select Rehabilitation. Meredith, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and what Select Rehabilitation is doing.
Absolutely. So my name is Meredith, and I'm actually an occupational therapist by background. I have worked in the post-acute sector, mostly in the geriatric senior space, for about 24 years. I also have a background in population health management from Johns Hopkins, and I've been with Select now for about a year to create their home continuum model, following patients from their clients' institutions, so skilled nursing facilities or senior retirement communities, and providing a concierge level of service in the home.
And that's what I love about what you and Select Rehabilitation is doing. You have this at-home strategy. In fact, your website says the care patients deserve brought directly to their homes. You know, I talk a lot on this program about the home becoming the setting of care, and hence I wanted to get your perspective of what you see that home being. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of different reasons to bring care to the patient. One of them is that, you know, just from a functional perspective, this is where the patients live and function every single day. This is where they get a shower. This is where they cook their meals. It's such an important setting of care as it relates to rehabilitation, especially. But not only that, just acute and post-acute care as well. There's a lot of different underlying population health philosophy as to why Select has created this continuum model. One of them being preventative care. So how important it is to get into that emerging risk of patients that will decline very quickly without anyone's knowledge and end up needing a more intensive level of care. I think the second piece is that I think it's pretty widely known and very widely surveyed that there's a huge consumer desire to have care brought to them. And I think it's been a little exacerbated by the pandemic, but there was a recent senior living study by Argentum, and they surveyed, I think there was, I'm not sure how many of the million residents in senior living that were surveyed, but 72% of those that were surveyed out of that pool felt like they received value and had a desire to have that care delivered to them in the home.
You know, I often talk about that average Medicare patient that has five chronic conditions, sees nine different doctors, and based on CMS data, they're only in front of their doctor 15 hours in a given year. I am a believer that wellness really occurs in that 8,745 hours in the year that you're not in front of the doctor. So the doctor can say, hey, here's your care plan. But, you know, I'm now in the home by myself, hypothetically, and I need a pathway. I need a coach. I need help in order to achieve that care plan. So your thoughts on that in the context of the overall delivery of care?
I think that's a very important point. I mean, it goes back to that wellness / preventative care aspect. I mean, if you think about the healthcare system in the United States, and you compare and contrast that to access and care in the home in other countries, we have a substantially lower amount of patients who have access to rehabilitation or primary care services in the home. And the interesting part about therapists, especially in this, what we call post-acute or non-hospital space, is that oftentimes we are spending really crucial and important time with the patient in most often settings where we are the clinician that is following that particular patient. So let's say we're seeing a patient in the nursing home, and that patient is going to go back either out into the greater community or into their apartment in senior living or some sort of retirement setting. We are contracting with home health agencies so that we're following them on that home health case. And then we're continuing to see them, whether it's in a clinic basis or now in the home, as an outpatient. So utilizing therapists at the top of their license to kind of partner on the physician side in that preventative care, where we're already doing wellness, we're already training patients on how to do home exercise and maintain vitality when they're not inside of a clinic space. It's the perfect opportunity for a company like Select to partner better with the medical community and better with the clients that we service for the betterment of those patients.
How do you distinguish yourself and what Select does versus a home health agency?
That's a great question. So it's a very separate and distinct service, right? So, and from a patient perspective, it's going to look very different. Often and most often in a home health case, you're receiving some level of skilled nursing. The patient is also utilizing a completely separate benefit. They're using their Part A benefit of their insurance, where what Select is providing is an outpatient program, right? So it's a Part B program in compilation with Part B services that are brought on by physicians. So it's a perfect opportunity to form succinct continuum with home health agencies, you know, offering what Select can offer, because oftentimes those home health agencies can benefit from that continued higher intensity, higher frequency outpatient case after the patient is no longer considered quote unquote homebound, which is their qualifying criteria for home health. This Select at Home model also provides a lot of benefit in partnering with home health agencies in the remote patient monitoring space. Since that can happen simultaneous to a Part A stay, we're able to better partner with those agencies to, again, afford better protection and care for those patients.
You talk about this continuum, care continuum. So it's to me, that's the extension of care from that brick and mortar into the home and providing all those services. You mentioned remote patient monitoring. How are you leveraging the virtual care services, or looking to leverage the virtual care services and marry that and couple that with in-home services?
I think it's, you know, and unfortunately, we have not done a tremendous job in this space of both transitions of care and preventing acute exacerbation, right? We firmly believe that, and I think there's a lot of research and evidence that a lot of the emergency room visits or rehospitalizations that occur with these geriatric seniors, once they're leaving a hospital or some sort of institution like a skilled nursing facility, we have not traditionally done a really good job of staying in front of that. And that's, I think, pretty much evidenced by the value-based purchasing program and the fact that year over year, more facilities in the nursing space take penalties versus meeting that threshold of kind of reducing those return to acute. I think there's a huge opportunity in the remote monitoring space, specifically because those geriatric seniors statistically have at least one or two chronic conditions. Those are the conditions that are the most expensive and burdensome to the healthcare system, and often the ones that are kind of left to fall between the cracks between settings, right? So utilizing that remote technology, utilizing those digital therapeutics, right? Being able to remotely monitor and then, oh, by the way, have this advanced partnership with physicians in a way that we traditionally have not necessarily done before. Everybody houses their own medical records in their systems, and we've not really had a great way of communicating even social determinants of health. So as a therapist, if I'm in someone's home and I'm treating them actively, I'm able to really witness and have evidence as to other financial, economic, or social barriers to their successful health outcome. And so I think it's so important to have some sort of emerging remote monitoring digital therapeutic kind of program as you're following patients between settings?
I couldn't agree more. Collecting the physiological and non-physiological data of a patient in that 8,745 hours and able to learn about the setting in which they live versus what you see in that 10-minute provider visit is really a game changer, in my view. And so it starts to open up the question relative to, does a patient have a barrier to care, or do they have a barrier to a cure? And what I mean by that is that we'll better understand the patient because of programs like what you're doing with Select, for sure, because you're looking at the whole person and you're looking at it on a 24/7 basis. But, you know, but if that care plan says diet, exercise, right? Do I really admit, so minimally, that I'll get into the cost of medication and things of that nature in a minute, but if I can't afford care, which is the number, you know, one of the primary barriers to care, I can't even afford the cure, right? So how do you look to address that? What type of programs might be available to address these types of findings?
I think that's one of the important parts of the Select at Home program and the partnerships that we will make, not only in the medical community, but in the public health community in a particular market. I think because we will be so intimately involved in all of those external barriers, and we recognize, and obviously so does the government and payers. I mean, you have Medicare Advantage plans. I think there's 245 plans now that are covering non-traditional determinants of health, things like private duty, things like transportation, things like food and meals, and they're covering those under their plans. You've got, you know, hospital at home and SNF at home waivers. You've got Medicaid home and community-based service waivers. We recognize the importance of treating and looking at how that patient functions in the home setting as a main puzzle piece to their overall healthcare outcome. The other piece of that is, and these remote monitoring programs really help us not only get a grip on patient engagement, but really helping to solidify having that patient be more engaged in their outcome because they actually have to do things to get better. So it makes them a more active participant. Anytime you're an active participant in something, it's almost impossible not to have more satisfaction with how that comes out, the outcome of that. So I think it's a compilation of a lot of different things, but I think the patient engagement piece is crucial.
I think it's a differentiator in the context of I can go to my doctor's office, see them for 5, 10 minutes, 12 minutes is actually the national average. So I can see them and then I go home. Mm-hmm. There's no patient engagement. Right. We there's been a lot of discussion about that, but the patient engagement really happens on an ongoing basis, not just a call every other week. Right. But at the end of the day, wellness is never achieved without patient engagement. A doctor, I've always said, cannot get to value if a patient is unwilling to get to wellness. They have to be coupled together in a single program, and hence I think that there's a lot of education necessary for patients to understand the health system in which they're sitting in, if you will, and not only to help the doctor, but to help themselves, right? It's not, you know, as you know, prescriptions, 50% of all prescriptions never filled, right? Mm-hmm. After the first script, it's not refilled. So we go on this endless cycle. I go through all that work of identifying, you know what, maybe it's time I go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. I go all that time to get the diagnosis. I get the care plan in my hand and then I elect, no, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
Right. And it's the same thing that on the transitions of care from hospital to home, at the end of the day, a loved one or a caregiver might stay in the house for a couple of days after coming home. But at the end of the day, the patient is always left on their own to do something. Thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I think that's an interesting point, because I think transitions of care are the most crucial aspect of patient care post any sort of acute incident. And I think there is a statistic where on average, it takes 8 phone calls to get in touch with a patient once they return home. And, you know, statistically, if you're going home, you know, or you're going back to the hospital or to the emergency room within 7 days of going home, you're missing a very large window of patients. And we've built a lot of transition of care programs around the telephone, and they don't necessarily always work. And back to your kind of point on wellness, I think in the senior living industry, we've recognized for a very long time the importance of wellness. I think we've done a really good job of providing wellness programs that are really focused on the physical and the emotional and the spiritual and the vocational. But it's how do you take those wellness programs, knowing you have an increasingly aging population with more and more chronic conditions, how do you advance those wellness programs that you're providing to help those seniors age in place? That's where they don't want to have to go into institutional care on a long-term basis. They want to live in their homes. And so it's how do we leverage remote technologies and digital health to kind of take us into that higher level of wellness support?
You used earlier in the conversation a phrase that I thought was yet another differentiation in how you think, and that was the word concierge. You know, a concierge service, in my view, takes the role of that care coordinator. And, you know, if I know this patient, and it falls under chronic care management as well, but if I know this patient has a doctor's appointment or needs a doctor appointment and can't get in, right, that concierge ultimately helps facilitate that patient engagement, right? Not only patient engagement with a care plan, but patient engagement with their care team and to ensure that they don't have to wait the average 23 days to get an appointment with their doctor. Mm-hmm. Thoughts on that, on how you see concierge?
Yeah, I think we have so many healthcare providers, and I think that we all recognize what we need to do. And we're here, we're doing our job, we're trying to do our best. But sometimes it takes either yourself or your loved one being on the other side of the table to really say, okay, there are some very significant gaps here. And if I didn't have my healthcare experience, if I didn't know who to call, if I didn't know what to do, if I didn't know which of my 9 different specialty providers I need to call about this particular issue, you know, you're really left to your own defenses, and especially in the geriatric space. So having that sort of concierge level feel, right, where you know exactly who you need to contact, you know exactly who you can reach out to, and they kind of direct and divert and triage to the appropriate place. I think that that makes a world of difference in how both the patient experiences the healthcare system and kind of how they feel about the services that they receive. We're here to serve people. That's what we do in the healthcare space. So I think that, you know, we use concierge as kind of this high level VIP word, but it really is truly that. It's a point of contact that builds a rapport with that particular individual or patient that helps them get to where they need to be. And I think that that's important.
You know, I've told my story with my father having every complication imaginable with diabetes, and he's been in the SNFs and things of that nature. And, you know, my father-in-law with Parkinson's and my mother with cancer. So, you know, you don't have to work in healthcare to understand healthcare. You kind of live it and experience it in real time. And I often say it was a good thing my mother had 6 kids, because it gave her a lot of caregivers, and my father a lot of caregivers. So, but I think about, and even with my mother-in-law and my wife, and I just think about, geez, there's probably so many people out there that just don't have someone to lean on. And that's really part of this unfortunate challenge that we have, right? And so the concierge concept, you know, someone feels like they have someone that's advocating for them, because you got in this today's healthcare system, you have to have it either advocate for yourself or you have to have an advocate to maximize all the different programs that you spoke about earlier relative to Part A and Part B you know, the average Joe does not know that. So they need someone to kind of be their partner in care. Thoughts on that?
As you think about healthcare reform, there are all of these different cogs on the wheel, and the patient experience and how they feel about the care that they've received, and how they feel if you're making them feel important, if you're making them feel like you're responding to their issues, if you make them feel like they can get an answer. Those little things are so crucial to the bigger picture. Yes, we can manage costs. Yes, we can manage utilization, and we can figure out how to operationalize and make that happen. But those intangibles about the patient experience and how satisfied they are with their care, those can be very challenging and difficult to do. I think that, you know, having that sort of concierge mentality, having those sort of digital technologies, even in the senior space where it's often intimidating to have to hook up a Bluetooth device, or I might be in a rural area where I don't have access to Wi-Fi or I can't afford to have Wi-Fi. It's incremental steps into figuring out what's the best way to accomplish successful outcomes and reform our system. So, yeah.
Interesting. So the one challenge that we hadn't talked about is the idea of what happens in the 8,745 hours. But the flip side of that equation is that the real problem, as I see this network, this healthcare system, is not how to get the value, although that is important, I will grant you. But, you know, you mentioned some of the ideals earlier. You know, we have a growing older, ager, sicker population, less doctors and nurses. And, you know, that's manifested itself post-COVID. And now we have cost of resources with the inflation. There was some financials released earlier this week about how hospitals are just very challenged on the resource side. It seems to me like you're leveraging the good balance of resources and technology to ultimately deliver care that's equal to or greater than what they already have. Thoughts on that?
I think it's definitely a logistical challenge. Whenever you're taking care outside of confined space and you're taking it to people, I think we've been caught in a unfortunate pandemic that has really thrown almost every healthcare institution into kind of a crazy world. We still experience to this day staffing issues, people who have left the profession, issues in a lot of different places because they're out sick and ill. So that piece of it is always going to be a challenge. But if you can utilize and come up with workflow processes where you can use your clinicians at the top of their license, and you can exploit technologies that help get the same result, it's a win-win situation for everybody involved. And I think the payer systems recognize how important digital technologies and even telehealth is, especially in the therapy space. So in January of this year, we were granted a host of CPT codes to launch our own remote therapeutic monitoring in the home for certain respiratory and musculoskeletal conditions. I think they'll add a cognitive behavioral code in 2023. So it's recognized that you can leverage short staff, you can leverage, you know, the inability to deliver care in one location through all of these different technologies. And hopefully, once the public health emergency ends, there will be legislation passed for therapists to continue to deliver services through telehealth, because it is a widely accepted and oftentimes preferred method of treatment, especially for those who have chronic conditions, who are immunocompromised, or who may be scared or nervous about having people enter their home or going into a doctor's office or a nursing home, for example.
Interesting. So we only have 1 or 2 minutes left. I'll leave it to you. You know, there's certainly a lot of great things that you're doing. There's no doubt about that. But there's everyone has inhibitors. A lot of people point to regulations. If you had two things to change in order to progress your path forward that is outside of your organization, what would you ask be done?
Oh, wow. That's a great loaded question, actually. I think One is regulatory. I think there are limitations, not federally, but state by state, that make it both operationally and financially difficult to deploy this kind of model from an outpatient perspective. And so that's a challenge. I think the other piece is interoperability. You know, we have to leverage a multitude of different software platforms and electronic medical records to make this work. And these are all systems that don't necessarily talk to one another. That will continue to be a challenge in transitions of care. That will continue to be a challenge in gathering good population health business intelligence and really being able to communicate back that to the providers who are really responsible for that care plan, i.e., that primary care role that is, you know, deemed to be the hub and center of value-based care. So I think that would be my answer, and those are biggies
They
that
are
will not
biggest.
be solved overnight, but regulatory and interoperability, I would say.
And is I would agree with both of them. And then being a former HIE product manager, it's really disappointing is I guess the best word I can come up with in the context of it being 2022 and us still having an interoperability challenge. But hopefully we'll continue to focus on that because it is dire in order for everyone to get the right level of care, because in order to get the right level of care, you need the right data in front of you. It's both the patient and the provider. So Meredith, I want to thank you for your time and your great insights. You're doing great work. The home is the setting of the future and the setting of care. So I look forward to hearing more about your successes in that regard. Again, Meredith Mull, Vice President of Community Health Strategy at Select Rehabilitation. You can actually read more about what Select is doing at selectrehab.com/select-at-home for more info. So, Meredith, thank you again for coming on the program.
Thank you, Tom. This was fabulous. Thank you.
I want to thank the show sponsors, HP. HP Engage Long Lifecycle Products provides the stability, safety, and security you need, plus flexibility and performance designed for today and tomorrow. As well, GenieMD, providing a modular, scalable, and customizable virtual care platform and clinical services to help providers extend care into the home, increasing access and quality while driving new revenue opportunities. If you missed part of today's episode, you can tune in at the same time, 11 a.m. or 7 p.m. Eastern, throughout the week, and be sure to check out the program page on healthcarenowradio.com. And remember, connect or follow me on LinkedIn, Twitter at Foley Tom, and follow the show's hashtag, The Virtual Shift. I'm Tom Foley. Until the next shift.